Good morning. Appreciate so much you being here this morning. I know that Saturday morning is not the typical time necessarily to come together for this purpose. If you're like many of the people back at Bull Verde, we do a Bible storytelling time on Saturday mornings once a month and a breakfast Bible study on Saturday mornings once a month. And it normally seems that it's the picture of mixed emotions. People want to be there, they want to study, they want to be with God's people, but Saturday morning, you know, that's my time to sleep in. They continue to come, and that's appreciated there. You have come this morning. I appreciate that very much as well. Maybe an example that would give us mixed emotions better would even be a marital or family example. I heard a guy say, mixed emotions, best description is watching your mother-in-law drive off a cliff in your new car. So... not sure how I should feel about that. That clearly is not right. I'm just, hopefully you understand. That is clearly not my opinion.
That's not part of the teaching.
No, that's not. Yes, thank you. That's a good way of putting it. That's not a part of the teaching this morning. So we're continuing to talk about God's blueprint for stronger families. Last night we set a pattern, at least to try to get our mindsets right. Which I said, I think God does that throughout the scriptures. He's trying to get us to think a certain way because he knows if we think a certain way, then we'll act a certain way. Today's lessons are much more on the, so how do we do that? How are we supposed to act? What are we supposed to do? As husbands, as wives, how am I supposed to be the God-like husband that I should be, the God-like father that I should be? As a wife, how do you become the God or Christ-like wife that he would want you to be? And so we're going to do this kind of backwards to the way Ephesians 5 lays it out in the sense that I'm going to deal with, if you want to be turning there, we're going to deal with the man's role first in a lesson that is titled, What Does She Want From Me Anyway? Now, you may have felt that very frustration right there if you're a husband. If you've been a husband very long, I would tell you, almost guarantee you have felt that at some point. You may have been smart enough not to look that way or express that, but all of us have struggled. It isn't that we don't want to be what we're supposed to be. It isn't that we don't want our wives to be happy and to be satisfied in the marriage. Actually, what happens many times is we just don't really understand what that's going to take. We don't, on a day-to-day basis, what does that mean? How am I supposed to behave today to fulfill her today? I know what my overall goal is in fulfilling her, but on a day-to-day basis, how do I really accomplish that? I was asked to write an article years ago when I did a meeting at a congregation. He said, we need something for the bulletin. He said, so write an article, and I struggled to try and figure out what do I want to specifically write, and I wrote an article on what I felt to be the two biggest problems in marriage. And I think similar to the way that Jesus said there's two commands that are larger than all the others, and mainly because they swallow everything else up. If you love God the way you're supposed to love God and love your neighbor as you're supposed to, he says everything else he's ever told us will fall under those two somewhere. And so they're kind of like an umbrella. He said on them hang the prophets and the law. And so I thought two things in marriage, I think that are similar to that, at least in that they are almost all-encompassing. One is ignorance. We just don't know what to do. It isn't that we don't want to do it. We just don't know what to do. We understand. Now, that's the easier of the two to correct. We're not talking about foolishness. Foolishness is hard to correct because foolishness is totally dependent on you as to whether or not you want to gain the wisdom that God asks. And let me give you an example of a difference. I grew up in Florida. Spent inordinate amount of time on the water, fishing, and skiing, swimming, whatever. I grew up living pretty much on the water. I didn't have the right complexion to make that choice in life. And so about the time I got 40, the doctor says, we need to cut that off. We need to cut that off. We need to burn that off. And so you start getting all these things that start showing up. Sunscreen? I'd never even heard of sunscreen when I was a kid. As a matter of fact, we would put on baby oil to attract more sun. Or if you needed the instant tan, they didn't have instant tan, then you could mix iodine with your baby oil and have a beautiful glowing orange tan right from the start. But that was ignorance. At some point, I had a dermatologist say, you can't do that. You need to put on sunscreen, whatever else the case may be. So if I go out now and am unprotected, if I don't take care of that now, that has nothing to do with ignorance. That's foolishness. I know what to do. I'm just choosing not to do it. I really can't help you with that part. You have to make that choice in regards to foolishness. But ignorance, we can help. The second of those is selfishness, and we'll get to talk about both of those today. The selfishness in marriage is the other side of the equation. And so how do we truly become selfless like Christ was, whichever we are, the husband or the wife, in the relationship? And that's difficult because much of the struggles, we do a whole lesson on occasion on conflict resolution, and I talk about the fact that Judy and I in 43 years of marriage have never had an argument. Now, I'm not done with that statement, understand. We've never had an argument that was founded in the basis of we were both trying to be so selfless that we just couldn't get past that. I only wanted to do for her. She only wanted to, and that we were just butting heads because we were both such selfless people. But how many arguments exist? How many moments of tension exist because we get a little selfish? Yeah, absolutely. Selfishness is what causes that problem. So we want to talk a little bit about this idea of what does she want from me anyway? And this happens because when we start thinking about what it is that she wants, we struggle with that because I just really don't know sometimes. And the reason is because I'm male and she's female. And if you go back to Genesis chapter 2, it says, and God created them male and female. That was intentional. And they are not remotely similar in virtually any fashion. The way we think, the way we communicate, the way we are structurally built physiologically, he created us to be different. And if you're like me, I'm a male, and I am extremely grateful that the female of this species is different than me. Are you, as a man? Yeah, we like that, but it makes it difficult. Let me give you an example. Before we get into Ephesians 5, an example that just says, just think of a normal routine to show you how differently we think. Just as a general basis, almost across the board, there will be areas in which we notice that. And so I think in terms of, so let's think about a Friday night, like a date night, and what we're going to do. You know what? We're going to go see a movie together. Or if you're like us, you know, we've reached the stage of life, we think, Friday night, good time to go grocery shopping. Hardly anybody will be at the store. We can always pop a video in when we get back home. But even that becomes the challenge because I always have to ask the dreaded question. What do you want to watch? Man, now I know I'm in trouble because I know what she's going to suggest. Man, give me an example. Something she's going to suggest. By genre, what's she going to suggest? A good war movie, right? That's not how. Yeah, she's going to suggest a romantic comedy. That most likely some kind of romantic comedy, or even if it's a romantic drama, either way. And I think, I can't do it. I can't do this again. If I have to watch an impossibly beautiful couple under extremely improbable circumstances fall in love, get in a fight, and spend 90 minutes getting back together again, I think, I can't. I need to see something blow up, some car crashes, or something. And so here's an illustration of that. And we understand that that's the humorous side of that, but it shows we think differently. So we're looking at the videos, and on the back of one, it says a female reporter is assigned to write a story about a woman who has left a string of fiancés at the altar. Any of you remember that movie? Maybe, men, you had to watch that with your movie. Runaway Bride? Sound familiar? It's one of the older ones, but on the other hand, I may be looking at one and it says, two escaped convicts and a female railway worker are on a train with no brakes and nobody driving, and I'm thinking, that's a movie. We understand. We think differently. We communicate differently. Everything about that, and that's God created. The things that are in me emotionally as a male, the attitudes that are in me, the way my brain functions, the way I approach life, all of that is God created. All that is in her as far as the way she processes, the way she communicates, the things that she thinks, those kinds of things, those are God created because he made us male and female. And so the question really shouldn't be so much what does she want. The question needs to be, what does she need? My job as a husband is to fulfill my wife's needs. What is it that she needs? How are wants and needs different, would you say? Because they are considerably different, would you not say? They're not the same. So give me differences between wants and needs. There you go. I want a new car, but I don't have to have that, do I? Other ways, wants and needs are different.
They satisfy different things.
They satisfy different things. And needs satisfy an ongoing, a continual. If it's, by definition, if it's a need, it's something that probably is continual, is it not? Wants are fickle. Would you agree with that? Have there ever been times when you think, man, I really want pizza, and then other times you think, I don't want pizza, but I need food. Food is a need. Pizza is a want. I said that one time in a meeting about, I said, people want ice cream. They don't need ice cream. And I had a lady after the class. She said, you are wrong. You are wrong. I need ice cream. So, but we understand that. Wants are very fickle. Needs are constant. Wants can be insignificant. I can want to love my kids. You understand that if you got kids, don't you? They want everything. And everything to them, although they don't ever say they want it. You ever notice that with a child? What does a child say? I need this. That's the way they think, even though it's not something that is that important. So what is it that she needs from me? And if I understand that's the question I'm answering, what does she need? Then I can't just shrug my shoulders as if that doesn't matter and just move on with life. Because needs are urgent. Needs, by very definition, are a requirement to her being fulfilled in her life. And so God never promises to supply everything we want, does he? But he does promise to what? To take care of us, to supply every need that we have, doesn't he? And why? Because needs are required. It's going to be the same in regards to husbands and wives. What is it that she needs from me? So look at Ephesians chapter 5. We're going to read verses 25 down through about 31, and then we'll come back and make some points in regards to where's the practical application of that. Husbands, love your wives. Now, let me just stop there for just a second. Because he's going to say, husbands, love your wives. Well, we know that's what we're supposed to do. I know I'm supposed to love my wife. My challenge is, I don't always know what constitutes that. The things that she really needs to be fulfilled in that love, sometimes I don't fully understand. And so that's the part I have to learn. How do I love my wife today? What can I do today that shows that I love her? He says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. He says, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. He says, love your wives, and then he's going to give us some words that I think are just incredible words. Once I discovered some of the things that he says as to how to love your wife, that became extremely helpful. Because he doesn't just say, love your wives, period, done with the chapter. He says, love your wives like Christ loved the church, and then he's going to tell us how Christ loved the church. Some of the things that Christ did that expressed his love for the church, but I understand how it is that I am to love my wife. So, three things that your wife needs, and I think he's going to point these out in Ephesians 5 and 1 Peter chapter 3, by the words that God uses to tell us what it is that we're to do. I'm not saying you therefore need to be able to break down and understand the original languages and everything else. Good English versions will tell you, here's the words God used. You can understand these words and understand what we're supposed to do. One, she needs to feel secure. In that relationship, she needs to feel secure. We'll see that in a moment. She needs to feel valued in that relationship, and she needs to feel connected. And he's going to use words to help us understand all of those things.
things that will help us understand our role is to make her feel secure, to make her feel valued, to make her feel connected, and how I can do that in a day-by-day life. And so we're going to find out that women are driven by security based in this concept of love. So when he says, love your wives, that's all you need to do. Love your wives. But what does that mean? That's going to be the key. How is it that I accomplish this? She's looking for security in different ways. Physical security. She's looking for that. She wants to feel secure physically in a relationship. And so God made male and female different. He made male primarily as the provider protector in a relationship. And he did that and therefore created woman to where she benefits from men who are men. I'm not saying men who act like men of the world. I'm saying men who are truly the men of God, if we'll step into that role. Says that she needs financial security. She wants to feel that in the sense of just knowing that he's taking care of her. She needs social security, not the fund. Security in social senses and in social settings. Have you ever been in a setting? I was just in this the other day. We were at a funeral, and one of my good friends from high school was there. I was talking to him. I'd never met his wife. And so he came up, and we're talking, and she's standing there beside him. He never introduced her at all. Not because he didn't love her, not because he didn't care. He just didn't think about that. That didn't bother him. That was just normal behavior. Not because he was cruel, it's just normal behavior. How do you think she felt? See, she doesn't like that. She wants to feel that she's a part of his social settings as well. And she needs to feel that. She needs to have the emotional security. It's interesting when I counsel with couples. If I'm meeting with couples and because they're having struggles, almost always the prevailing complaint of women is a lack of emotional support in the marriage. Very rarely is that the complaint of a man. Very rarely. His is going to go another direction, as we'll see. So she needs to have all those things. Barbara DeAngelis said, emotional safety is the key that unlocks a woman's heart and soul. How do I make her feel this way? How am I going to make her feel safe in the marriage? Those are the things that God says to us, I think, that would help us to understand that. Holly Faith Phillips, another writer on women's needs, wrote, for most women, security isn't primarily a material thing. It doesn't come from knowing in our heads that all our needs are provided for. Security for women is primarily a heart thing. Our deepest feelings of security come from being loved and cared about. When she knows that she is, in fact, on this earth, the most important, the purpose of your life, then that is what gives her the security that she's looking for. So how do we accomplish that on a day-by-day basis? If I were to ask you a question, let me see if any of the men can respond to this, because I usually get the same answer. A question your wife may ask you that you rarely, if ever, have asked her. Any guesses as to that? Wait, I'm sorry, what? There it is, exactly. Rarely will a man ever ask his wife, do you love me? Why? Because we've got kind of that Fonzie syndrome. You know, we look at the mirror and we think, hey, how could she not love me? No, it's because our need is different. Our need is different. Her prevailing need is love. And so she asks that question, do you love me? And as husbands, we're thinking, well, of course I love you. Of course I love you. I would think that would be obvious that I love you, but it's not always obvious or she wouldn't ask the question. And so it's behind a lot of the other questions that she asks. And so here are just some things from a practical side, I think, that will help us to understand that we're demonstrating her the things that will give her that security, that safety in the marriage. When we spend time with her, that's important. Good time, quality time. When we're willing, and I can just give you another piece of advice, taking her to watch you play softball does not qualify. I found that out. You know, some things you learn by experience. When I'm willing to spend time with her, what did God say in through Paul in Ephesians chapter 5? He said, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and what? Gave himself up for her. How sacrificial are we? Now, most men that I know, most husbands that I know that are Christians, would in fact give their life for their wife. Most, I think, would be willing to do that. If they had to step in front of their wife to protect her, they'd be willing to do that. But sometimes it's more difficult to live lovingly than it is to die willingly. Am I willing to sacrifice my time? Am I willing to show her that she means that much to me? When she comes to talk to me and the TV's on, am I willing to turn the TV off so that I can talk to her? Does it matter that much to her? I listened to a gentleman the other day. He said his wife was talking to him because she didn't think he was giving her that time. And she made the statement eventually in the conversation. She says, "You never just call me for no reason when he's at work or whatever." He said, "You're welcome." We don't think in those terms. But he is saying to men, you've got to give yourself up. Your time. You know, I can tell you, I used to come home occasionally and I could get pretty comfortable in a recliner. And sacrifice wasn't the first thing on my mind. Being served was the first thing on my mind. And yet Jesus loved in such a fashion that he came to serve rather than to be served. And it didn't matter if he was tired. It didn't matter what he was feeling like. If somebody needed something, John 4 is a great example of that, is it not? Do you ever think about the statement when Jesus went through Samaria? The disciples, I've got a whole sermon called "Thank God the Disciples Were Out to Lunch," because they would have never stopped and talked to this woman, but Jesus did. He stopped. But you remember how that started? He sat down when he got there. Why? Why did he sit down? He was tired. Well, that's easy to understand, is it not? With his schedule, with what he was doing, with the emotional strain of his life, he was exhausted. He sat down. Here comes somebody with a need, and what does he do? He's up and he's talking. Why? Because he was less important in his mind than she was. That's why Philippians tells us, have this mind in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. He says, don't think about yourself so much. Think about the needs of others. He would tell us that we need to do that. When we allow entry into our world, in other words, when what we're doing, we feel is important to share with her as well. That she wants to have that connection. She feels safest. That's that social setting idea. I'm not a phone guy, typically. Don't spend a lot of time on the phone. With the exception of, I'll talk to my boys on the phone. I should say our boys. They're our boys because they're doing pretty well right now. They were only mine when they misbehaved. But when I talk to our boys, I'll talk. And then when I talk to Ralph Walker, who's my best friend outside of my wife, my best friend in this life. And we'll talk about the most mundane and inane things that you could imagine. We've got 50-some years of history. And so we just have a conversation. We may talk on the phone 45 minutes. That doesn't happen with me and anybody else. And I get off the phone, and what do you think the first question I get asked is? What'd you talk about? And so I say, I was on the phone for 45 minutes. Do you want me to rehearse the entire conversation? Well, that's the wrong question to ask, because what do you think her response to that is? Yes. I'd like to hear it. It isn't because she's nosy. If she talks to one of her girlfriends on the phone for 45 minutes, my entire thought process is, if I'm there, please, when you hang up, don't tell me about it. Why? Because I don't care? No, because we're processing different. She needs to feel that security to know that she's inside my life, that she's a part of my life. That's that heart security. That's that sacrifice that she wants to have. When I reassure her of my love, I mean, we've been married 43 years. I didn't grow up in a household where people told each other they loved each other. And I'm telling you, that's a harder habit to break sometimes than you think. Getting rid of the way you were conditioned in life doesn't always happen easily. And so she'll say, do you love me? Or ask, do you love me? Or say, I really like it when you tell me you love me. And how important is that? You know how you could absolutely eliminate that question? Never stop telling her you love her. If you tell her several times a day you love her, my guess is she's never going to ask you because you're preempting the question. And so how important is it that I show her that? I mean, how many times did Jesus do and express things to demonstrate to us that he loves us? I mean, everything about his life. And he was constantly reassuring his disciples, constantly reassuring those that he talked to, how much love God had. Why? Because to feel secure in that relationship like I want to feel with Jesus, it helps me. Because I have my doubts. You ever struggle with your own spiritual esteem? Thinking, why would God love? We sing songs. And Can It Be? Do you guys sing that song at all? It's like, wow. How valid is that question? Seriously? For me? God would die? We understand that concept. Well, he's saying, love your wife that way. Just express it. Just check in. I said that guy, you know, told his wife, you're welcome for not calling, but you remember the Stevie Wonder song? I just called to say I love you. I just called to say I care. Sometimes that's necessary. Send cards, send notes, send a text, whatever else the case may be. He says, love her in that sacrificial manner. Gave himself up for her. And in verse 28, he says, and in the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He says, take care of her like you'd take care of yourself. You nourish, he said, yourself. You feed yourself. Feed her. Take care of her. He's not asking you to totally ignore your own life, but he's saying the primary there would be your relationship with your wife, nourishing her. We understand that. Babies, we understand. Baby needs food. What's a baby do? Cries, and so you know. Or they need changing. What's a baby do? They cry. You know, they're hurting. What's a baby do? They cry. You always get these triggers. Maybe if our wives sat down on the living room floor and cried, maybe we'd understand. She's asking for something. What happens is they get conditioned not to always ask. But we need to be aware. We need to nourish. We need to feed. We need to help her understand that. And what's going to help her understand that? She's wanting to know, am I more valuable to you than anything else in your life? Other than Christ. You realize the marriage relationship is the only relationship God intends be absolutely lifelong without breaking. He understands that and expects that out of us. And so outside of my relationship with Christ, my wife must be the most important individual in my life, he says. I have to have that focus. It has to be the primary relationship that exists. That becomes before all things. And so she wants to know, how valuable am I? Look, turn over to 1 Peter chapter 3 for a minute. Because that's the way Peter is going to help us understand this. 1 Peter chapter 3. He talks to the wives first, verses 1 through 6, and then to the husbands. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers be not hindered. There's a lot packed in that verse. There's a lot packed in there. He starts off again telling us that we're to live with our wives now in an understanding way. He does not say, husbands, understand your wives. Why? You can't. You can't. I can't think like she thinks because I'm male. Does that make sense? I'm not saying that's somehow flawed. God created us differently. I think a part of that is to draw us together so that I can fit and fill her needs, so that I can search to find out what it is that she wants. That's the same thing God wants in my relationship with him, is it not? He's saying, I want you to search. I want you to dig. You can find me, but you need to get deeper and deeper in that relationship. But he does say, live with her in an understanding way. How many people in here have multiple children? All right. Put your hands down. How many would say those children are considerably different from one another? Yeah. How did that happen? Absolutely. Same parents, right? Same home, same rules, same genetic structure. Everything is the same. Our three are completely different in a lot of different ways. Give me some areas of life. Don't tell me your kids' problems. Just give me some areas of life where your kids are different. All right, there you go. So the physical ability one may have as far as athletic, the coordination levels they have. Good point. So a physical difference even. Independence. Some may be highly dependent, need that relationship. Some may not need any association at all. Ours were that way. What's that?
Remorse.
Yeah, ours were all the same that way. Just on the wrong side of the equation. No, absolutely. You know what? With our kids, if this was funny as we could watch. We had, out of our three, I won't name which ones, but our third was was the kind that you could correct him, and he'd just sit in the corner and just be miserable because he had disappointed you. I mean, just a broken heart when you'd correct him. And our middle son, again, remain unnamed, you could discipline him with a baseball bat, and he'd look at you like, is that the best you got? Now, please understand, we didn't use a baseball bat. But I'm saying they reacted so incredibly differently to correction and discipline, and I don't understand how that happened. But you know what's really interesting and important to understand in a passage like this? It doesn't matter if I understand why. He doesn't ask me to understand why she's different. But he says, understand that she's different. So because I understood my kids were different, I couldn't discipline them the same way. You knew that. I had to find different ways to work with them. Because they were different in their attitude towards school and things of that nature, you had to work differently with them. I don't know why they were different, but it didn't matter. I knew they were. So if I know my wife is different, it doesn't matter that I understand why she's different than I am. I need to understand that she is, and so how do I solve that? How do I find a way to fulfill her need individually for who she is and the way that God created her? And our greatest obstacle there is ourselves, men. That's where the selfishness comes in. I don't want to work hard enough sometimes to find out what my wife needs, what will really fulfill her. And my selfishness gets in the way. And so I need to, you know what, I just need to forget. She doesn't, sometimes I've been convinced, and Judy could tell you this, we've had discussions where I'm convinced. The whole point is, if I could just get her to see that my way is more logical, then this would all be solved anyway. It doesn't work that way. My job is not to make her like me. My job is to fulfill her. Because she is God's child. And he says, not only God's child, he says, she's your fellow heir. And he says, and if you don't approach her this way, he says, your prayers are going to be hindered. He says, guys, it's like stopping your prayers right at the ceiling. They don't go anywhere, he says. If I can't live with my wife the way God tells me to, he says, your prayers are affected. He says, you need to keep that in mind. But then he uses that great word, honor. He says, honor her. Honor her. Think about that. That word describes, it actually means like weighty. The idea of, you've seen those scales, balance scales, where you put something on this side, and so as you put something on this side, it goes down here. Maybe it's something you're buying at the store they would buy, and they'd have to put enough coins on this side to do what? To bring it up here. That's what you're trying, he's saying. And so here's what he wants you to envision. He says, honor your wife. So he's saying, here's your wife, and he says, her value has put the scale here. He said, you need to make sure she understands, I can't even find enough to put on this side to bring it up to balance. That's how valuable you are. There isn't enough to really put you there. It's putting her on a pedestal, not in a bad way. It is saying treating her like the value she is, even like the weaker vessel that he talks about. He's not talking about physically weaker, I don't think, even though we are made differently physically. He's not talking about spiritually weaker. She's your fellow heir. But there is a difference in the way we're structured and the way we react to things. Think about, you got anybody in here got a china cabinet still? This is probably going to be the generation, like my generation and around there. Because people used to give china as a Christmas gift. Great gift. As a wedding gift. You got to eat off that china once every 8 or 10 years when you had special company over. It's a cabinet. You just got all these dishes, but they're in a special cabinet. Why? Because they're fragile. You don't treat them the same. Anybody ever have a Tupperware cabinet, like a beautiful chest for Tupperware? No, because God talks about vessels. You know, some vessels are not the same. Tupperware, you just open up the cabinet and toss it in. He's saying you can't treat your wife that way. Treat her like you'd treat that china. Put her in the fine place. You want everybody to understand exactly how much she means to you. And that's why he uses words like that. And so when I value her greatly is when she feels safest. How safe do you feel in Jesus Christ? when he says things like, nobody can snatch you from him, how safe do you feel? Now, I can walk away, understand, but nobody can snatch me. Romans 8, when he starts talking about if God be for us, who can be against us? And you have that incredible description starting in verse 31. He's just saying, how secure should we feel in our relationship with Jesus Christ? And so I would ask you this, how much do you mean to him? How do you know how valuable you are to Jesus Christ? He gave everything that he had, didn't he? Gave his life. For me. If everybody in this room was absolutely sinless, and if everybody in history had been absolutely sinless, I need to understand Christ would have died because I am not, and he would have done it even if it was only for me. That's what he wants us to understand. Every single individual. He didn't die for the group. He died for every single person. That's how valuable we are to him. He says, treat your wife with that kind of valuable. So some things to make her feel valued. Let me just give you four secrets quickly. Not really secrets, but four ideas quickly. One, show her that her happiness is a priority to you. That matters. That you want to go out of your way to do the things that will fulfill her. Show her that. Make sure she understands the sacrifices that you're making. How are you going to know what makes her happy? What's that? Ask her. We need to become better listeners, guys. We need to pay attention. We need to be aware. She'll drop hints even if you don't ask sometimes. I need to understand, what is it that she's looking for? Because unless you just think your wife is purely greedy and doesn't care, she's not asking you questions because she just wants everything. She's looking for fulfillment, and that's where she finds fulfillment, and so she's asking you. Secondly, show interest in her life. Let her know that you do care. So when I made the joke earlier about, maybe I shouldn't say a joke, I really don't want to know what her girlfriends talk to her about, but when she's got things in her life that matter to her, I may not want that whole conversation, but if she's got a good friend and she's having conversations with a good friend, I need to let her know that does matter to me, that she's got a friend that can help fulfill those needs as well. And I'm appreciative of that, and I will listen to the things that she has to say about that. Very critical. Show her that you need her and you value her input. Valuing her input does not mean letting her say what she wants to say and then showing her why you're right and she's not. I used to occasionally use an expression with Judy. I never really meant it in any harsh way, but it was just an expression. But then you find out she didn't appreciate it as much as I did. She would be talking about something. I would always say, you know what? You're entitled to be wrong. Everybody has that right to be wrong. Well, I didn't really mean it in a harsh way, but there were a lot of times I can tell you that I'd let her give her whole side of something, and then my entire intent was to prove why my side was right and her side wasn't. And so what was I telling her? You're entitled to be wrong. It didn't matter if you say the phrase. I can't tell you how many times things have been made simpler because I was willing to listen to and follow her advice on things. Would you agree with that, men? Are there times that... And how much trouble I could have been saved if I'd have learned that lesson way before I learned it. Yeah, absolutely. Very helpful to make sure. Our egos get in the way. Ask her advice. Make sure. Don't take her for granted. Don't take her for granted. If you take her for granted, then everybody in the household is probably going to suffer. And so as we think about how Christ loved the church, how am I going to make her feel valued? Demonstrate with words and with actions. You remember what we're told? How are we supposed to love? Love in what? Deed and in truth. He's saying not only the things that you say, not only the way, but the things that you do. Love in deed. Actually doing something. Demonstrate that love toward your wife. I taught a junior high class, and I told the parents I was going to do this so they didn't think I was a heretic or something. But I taught the junior high class, and we were talking about love, and I asked the junior high class, do your parents love you? And if you're teaching that younger grades, and they were younger middle schoolers, They said yes, which I'm glad for the first part, yes. And I said, how do you know? What do you think the most common response is from a child that age? Most common response from a child that age is they tell me. They tell me they love me. I know they love me because they tell me they love me. To which I followed up, how do you know they're not lying to you? That's why I tell the parents ahead of time. But I just want to get to the next point. Because then the kids will say, well, they do this, and they do, and I said, there you go. That's the point. In this was the love of Christ manifested. I would believe that God loves me because he tells me he loves me and he is my God and I trust him, but he didn't leave it at that, did he? He demonstrated his love. He manifested it in that Christ came and died for me and for you. We need to make sure, men, that we're demonstrating that love as well. So we need not only to value her and make her feel safe and secure, but we need to help her be connected as well. I love the last word that he uses here when he's describing that in 1 Peter chapter 3. He says, nourishing and cherishing her. That's a great word. When he says cherishing her. How do I kindle the flame of romance? I told you last night, marriages cannot be sustained on romance alone, but God does not ask you to remove romance and emotion and feelings from a marriage. Read the Song of Solomon. Sometimes if you think God's not interested in how we are emotionally and physically stirred by one another. He wants that because she needs to feel connected, cherished. That word literally carries the idea of to soften by body heat. In other words, it means to hold somebody close. Best description for me, the best visual I can ever get in my mind, is like a little infant. You ever seen a little infant when they start crying and start to tense up? Babies have an incredible ability to flex every muscle in their body simultaneously. I mean, they go rigid hard. And I did what any good father would do. I said, here, Mom, take. But you can give a baby like that to a mother, and a mother hold that baby close, and I don't know how to describe it. I tell people they melt. You ever seen a baby just soften because a mother holds it close? Baby's crying, and it just softens because it knows it's connected to Mom. That's the word he's using. Husbands, cherish her. Hold her close. Make sure you don't ever let that go. Continue to pursue her with everything that you pursued her with before the relationship. And there are things that we can do to help her understand that. Three things that will kindle your wife's flame. Three things that will keep that fire burning. One, physical affection. Non-sexual touch. Physical, giving her a hug. Putting your arm around her. Just walking up behind her and putting your arms around her waist. Most women thrive on the physical contact that is only saying that I love you. Men are all or nothing. Women are not that way. They're much more about just holding hands, just having the closeness. Just sit beside them on the couch. Whatever it is that provides that physical affection. Judy could be doing something like washing dishes. Not that it would, she wouldn't. She might like me to come up and wash the dishes, but I can tell you I can have just as good of effect if I can walk up behind her, put my arms around her waist, give her a kiss on the neck and say how much I love you. Entire day is made. She just feels wonderful because of that. As men, we're not normally that way. If I'm working at the computer, she comes up and kisses me on the back of the neck, I'm thinking, is this going somewhere? I've got work to do. Because we approach it differently. I don't mean that in a crude way. I'm just saying we're not thinking the same way, the process. And so she wants that physical affection. Secondly, receiving compliments. She wants to know that you notice, that you pay attention. We had a couple over to our house years ago. Friends of ours, younger than us, as a matter of fact, the age older than our kids. But they would come over with our kids a lot, and we remained friends. They came over one time when one of our sons had come home from school. He was there on a trip home. So he hadn't seen her in a little while. And we're sitting at a table eating supper. And he looks at her and he says, my son does, looks at this woman. He goes, oh, you changed your hair. He said, you did something to your hair. And she didn't look at him at all. She turned and looked at her husband. She said, yes, I did. 3 weeks ago. Thank you very much. It isn't that she wants to be flattered. She doesn't want you to say things that aren't true. She wants you to notice. She feels connected when you notice. When you say to her, you know what? When you came out of the closet the other day and you had on that such and such dress, I love that dress. You just look beautiful in that dress. And I've always thought that you look stunning in that. You think that doesn't make a difference to her? It does. Are we noticing her? Are we making sure that that she knows that? Notice her, not other women. And I mean that in the sense of don't look. You know, you can be walking down the mall and your wife says, you see that woman's hair? Now I'm just telling you, there's no good answer to that. If you say, yes, but I like yours better, she's aggravated because you noticed it to begin with. If you say, I didn't even see her, what woman? Then she knows you're not being honest. One guy said, the best you can do is hope to have a stroke. But that's because we have a tendency sometimes to notice the things around us other than our wife. And you want to make her feel like you love her, notice her. And then finally, schedule time specifically for her. I loved one guy's description of this. Anybody here keep a day planner, to-do list, anything like that? You know, that was pretty common. This guy had one of those, like a day planner, so a little booklet, had all the dates, and, you know, this is before you could do it all on your phone. And so he's putting all this stuff down in his day planner. He said, every event in my day planner is written in pencil, except every appointment or date with my wife is in ink. I thought, what a cool idea. He was not saying, I couldn't change these no matter what, but what he wanted his wife to know is, these are not really erasable. These are more permanent. This is time with you. I'm not going to let something else get in the way. And we do sometimes because we think our wives will understand. Schedule that time specifically for her. Calls will do that. Cards will do that. Women like to have cards mailed to them. Why? Why do we not like to mail a card to our wife, men? There's usually two problems with that.
It takes time.
It takes time. That's why she likes it. She knows you didn't get the anniversary card on the way home from the store by stopping at the drugstore if you mailed it, if it got there on time. Other reasons we don't like mailing cards.
Money.
I've got to pay for a stamp. Why am I paying for a stamp to mail it to the house I'm walking in the door? And there's a part of us, it's only whatever, 50 cents, give or take, but we're thinking, why do I do that? And then also, just the logic of it. Men wrestle with the logic. Why am I mailing to my house? And so we don't do that. But they love that. They want to see that. Notes, cards, surprises, any of that. Women want to know you've devoted that time to her and that she matters. And she matters more than the other aspects of life. That's why women like flowers. Men don't like flowers as a gift. Basically, why? They die. So, yes, they've already been cut off. They just look alive, don't they? But we're thinking, you know what, you're going to give me a drill or something. I mean, something that I can use. Give me don't bring me home flowers. Why do you think women like flowers? You ever think about that?
Pretty.
They're pretty is one of the reasons. Second reason, because they die. That is the only value they have, is to show love. She recognizes you bought something that to you is illogical because it's going to die in a matter of a week or two, and yet you were willing to spend the money. It isn't a matter of just the flowers. It is the thought process that goes into that. Show her. Demonstrate to her. Think in terms of those words. Sacrifice in that love for her. Nourish her. Value her. Cherish her. God says, I give you these words so that you understand on a day-by-day basis how to do that. Really appreciate your attention this morning. We're going to take a break for a few minutes before the second session. I appreciate that. We probably went a little longer than you may have thought, but we're still short of 10:30, so that's not bad.
10-minute break.
Thank you.